Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
Hello and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. On a crisp November afternoon in 1957, Deputy Sheriff Frank Warden walks into the local hardware store in Plainfield, Wisconsin, to talk to his mother, Bernice, who owns and runs the store. He is surprised when he finds it empty, and as he walks around the store, he starts to get a bad feeling. Then he sees the cash register. It is open, and there are bloodstains on the floor. This sounds like the beginning to so many common true crime stories that we're all familiar with, but this is no common case. This is the story of the real Buffalo Bill, Eddie the Mad Butcher, the Plainfield Ghoul, Ed Gein. Let's get into it. August 27, 1906. Ed Gein was born in a rural part of Wisconsin in 1906 to Augusta and George Gein. George was an alcoholic who was unable to keep a job, and Augusta hated him for it. The family lived in isolation on a 155-acre farm near Plainfield, Wisconsin. Augusta liked living on the farm because she believed that the world was an evil place, and she thought outsiders would have a bad influence on her two sons, Ed and Henry. The only time the boys left the farm was to attend school for a couple of hours a day. The rest of their time was spent doing chores. Their mother was fanatically religious. She preached hellfire and damnation and constantly told her boys about the immorality of the world, the evils of alcohol, and told the boys that all women, but her of course, were promiscuous and instruments of the devil. Well, that's super healthy. Sounds like a fantastic way to raise kids, making them hate and fear everything and everyone that's not them. Every afternoon, she would read to the boys from the Bible, usually choosing verses from the Old Testament and the Book of Revelation, because she fancied the parts about death, murder, and divine retribution. She sounds delightful.
Ed Gein grew up in a small town, Plainfield, Wisconsin.
Plainfield was an utterly nondescript, obscure place, really in the middle of nowhere, and the population has never been more than 600 to 800 people. That area of Wisconsin tends to be a very, very hard scrabble part of the state, sometimes referred to as the Great Dead Heart of Wisconsin. The Geins lived a fairly good distance away from town. When you look at Gein's life, you just have this sense of incredible isolation from any human contact except with his crazy mother.
And he grew up in a household with an alcoholic and abusive father and a mother who was very domineering. She was fanatical in her religion and did not want Ed or his brother Henry to have much to do with the outside world because there were sinners out there.
Augusta Gein really smothered her two sons and denied them any meaningful relationships with the outside world, and particularly with women.
And also had extreme pathological aversion to anything to do with sex. So Ed grew up with this very, very powerful ambivalence towards his mother. On the one hand, he consciously worshipped and revered her and saw her as a godlike figure. But on another unconscious level, he inevitably developed this terrible resentment and hatred.
There's an ongoing argument about whether sociopaths are born or are created. But I think the very strained circumstances of the Gein household makes an argument that you can turn a child into a monster.
Ed Gein was known as a strange kid. His teachers remember him bursting out laughing when nothing had been said, as if he was hearing a joke only he could hear. He had a hard time making friends, not just because he was shy, but because he was so strange. Despite his social shortcomings, Ed was smart and was a particularly good reader. Ed's father died in 1940, which left Ed and Henry to do odd jobs around the town to earn money. They usually worked as handymen, but Ed also frequently babysat for the residents of Plainfield well into his 30s. Knowing what he did makes that even stranger. Now, that said, he was actually pretty good with the kids, I guess. It seems like he related better to them than he did with adults, even into his 30s. Ed was strangely attached to his mother. Even in his mid-30s, he had never dated or had a girlfriend. His brother Henry would often speak badly about their mother, and it made Ed very angry. Very, very angry. May 16th, 1944. Ed and his brother Henry were burning away weeds and brush on their property. The fire got out of control, so much so that someone called the fire department and they came and put the fire out. Later that evening, Ed reported his brother missing. A search party was formed, and soon Henry was found dead in the brush, laying face down with no signs of being burned anywhere on his body. He had been dead for hours, and investigators recorded the cause of death as heart failure, even though there was severe bruising on Henry's head. Most historians now agree the cause of death was Ed Gein, who murdered his brother. Ed and his mother were now alone. Augustus suffered a stroke not long after Henry's death, and Ed devoted his entire life to taking care of his mother. Augusta was bonkers. One time she and Ed visited a farmer to purchase straw for their livestock. While they were at this man's farm, he got angry with his dog and started beating it. A woman came from inside the house and told the man to stop beating the dog. He didn't stop, and he beat the dog to death right in front of everyone there. Augusta got very, very upset over the whole thing, but she wasn't upset because this man beat his dog to death. She was upset because the woman who came out of the house was not legally married to the farmer. Augusta left the farm in a rage and called the woman a harlot on her way out. Like I said, delightful. December 29th, 1945. Augusta Gein dies at home, leaving Ed completely devastated. An expert on Gein wrote, "When Augusta died, Ed was absolutely alone in the world. He lost his only friend and his one true love." I don't like that. That makes me feel weird. Ed kept the farm and continued doing odd jobs to make money. Inside the house, he boarded up every room his mother used, including the upstairs, the parlor, the living room, and her bedroom. He began living in a small part of the home, which grew increasingly dirty by the day until finally, Ed was living in absolute squalor. About this same time, Ed started buying pulp magazines and big adventure stories. His favorites were the stories that involved World War II, German, I don't want to say the word here, atrocities and cannibalism. He lived in relative solitude, only interacting with others when he went into town for supplies. What no one knew is that Ed Gein was severely mentally ill. His mental illness was compounded by his mother's death, and when he started reading these pulp fiction kind of horror books, he decided to try what was in the books. Now, not because of the books, let's be clear about that. I'm not a fan of blaming art or fiction for what real people do in real life. He did what he did because he was mentally ill, and maybe because he was evil.
He enjoyed reading magazines and newspapers and books about people doing rather bizarre things.
And one of the interesting things that you find when you look at 1950s culture, there was a lot of very lurid, sensationalistic material.
One of the most popular forms of periodical were horror comic books.
Particularly The Vault of Horror and Tales from the Crypt and so on. They were wonderful stories and beautifully illustrated, but they did contain an extreme level of graphic violence.
And they were read not just by kids, but adults as well. People from all walks of life were finding some kind of gratification in the extreme imagery, the slaughterhouse imagery.
Was he a monster who was made by an overbearing, domineering mother, or was he born a monster? That is the question we're always asking when we discuss these cases. But as you guys know, because you watch a lot of this stuff, it is very common for these types of men to have either an overbearing, domineering, or an abusive mother. November 16th, 1957. This brings us back to where we started, in the hardware store, with the deputy sheriff looking for his mother. When a town resident saw the sheriff's car in the parking lot of the hardware store, he walked over and said the store had been very quiet all day, but he figured that that was just because it was deer hunting season and everyone was out hunting. But he had noticed something strange. At about 9:30 that morning, 8 hours earlier, he saw the delivery truck owned by the hardware store drive out of the parking lot and it never came back. The sheriff and the residents then began looking for Bernice Warden, and then the sheriff remembered something. The day before Bernice disappeared, Ed Gein had been in the hardware store. Ed talked with Bernice and told her that he would be back first thing in the morning to buy a gallon of antifreeze. As Deputy Warden went through the store receipts, he found that the last receipt was written that morning at 9 a.m. and it was for a gallon of antifreeze. The sheriff found the judge and asked for a warrant. Ed Gein was spotted in town and he was arrested as he shopped at the local grocery store. After he was taken into custody, the small police force began a search of Ed Gein's farm. Now I'm going to stop here for a second. If you're squeamish, you might not want to watch the rest of this. I'm very bound by what I can say here, but I'm going to try to describe what they found in the best way that I can. Upon entering the home, after the initial smell sent some investigators outside, cops from this small town walked into a scene unlike any that had ever been imagined at the time, let alone reported. In a shed on the property, police found a decapitated woman hanging upside down by her legs with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrists. The police report she was dressed out like a deer. She had been shot with a .22 caliber rifle and had been mutilated after her death. And this horrific discovery is only the beginning. As the search continued, police found a wastebasket made of human skin, a basket of human bones, human skulls being used for kitchen bowls with food in them, several chairs with seats made from human skin, a lampshade made from human skin, 9 female genitalia in a shoebox, 4 noses in a basket, a pair of lips on the end of a window shade drawstring being used as the pull mechanism, a corset made from a female torso, which had been skinned from the shoulders to the waist, an unnamed amount of skulls, a box of female fingernails, and a belt made from female human nipples. I will never look at a concho belt the same again. And that's not all. Police also found masks made from the skin of female heads, leggings made from human leg skin, human skulls used as decoration on the posts of Ed Gein's bed, local woman Mary Hogan's face in a paper bag and Mary Hogan's skull in a box, and then they found the missing woman, Bernice Warden. Her head was in a burlap sack and her heart was in a plastic bag sitting in front of the stove, ready to be cooked. And then there was the woman suit. Ed Gein had been taking parts of the skin of different women sitting at his mother's sewing machine and stitching them together to create a woman suit. I would love to show you these photographs as they're actually quite fascinating, but I can't. I mean, can you believe this list? Not just a body, not just a couple of bodies, but the parts of many, many bodies, some of them turned into household items and others into decorative items. You can imagine what happened in little old Plainfield, Wisconsin. The story became a national sensation. People could not believe what had been found. It took police weeks to photograph and catalog all of the evidence they had found. Police returned to the station, where Ed was still in custody, and began questioning him as to what they had found. He told them that between 1947 and 1952, he had made around 40 trips in the night to the local graveyards. There, he would exhume recently buried bodies and take them home with him. Most of the graves he dug up were of middle-aged women that resembled his mother. I think I'm done. He took the bodies home where he tanned the skins to make his lampshades and chair seats and nipple belts. Authorities then began digging up the graves Ed remembers robbing. Everything he said was true. The graves Ed remembered digging up were empty. In one of them, they found Ed's crowbar that he had forgotten to retrieve after using it to pry open a wooden casket. In another, they found dissected body parts that Ed had returned for some reason. Ed told investigators that it was all for making his woman suit, so that he could, quote, become his mother. He wanted to literally crawl inside her. I'm sorry, you guys, for even doing this story. This is awful. Ed denied any sexual activity with the bodies, claiming that they smelled bad. Mary Hogan, whose skull and face were found in Ed's house, she had been a tavern owner who'd gone missing in 1954. People who knew Ed then came forward, reporting that Ed had showed them shrunken heads that he claimed to have received from a relative who served in the Philippines during World War II. Well, let me tell you, those shrunken heads were not from the Philippines. They were just the town folk from Plainfield. Investigators were quite sure that some of the body parts they found belonged to a missing babysitter, Evelyn Hartley, who went missing in 1953. Ed even told investigators that he had tried to dig up his own mother, but her gravesite happened to be near a piece of concrete wall used by the cemetery to reinforce the sandy Wisconsin soil. And because of the concrete, he couldn't get to her. Well, thank someone for small miracles. November 21st, 1957. Ed Gein was arraigned on murder charges in Washara County Court, where he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. He was examined and diagnosed with schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent to stand trial. He was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane and then later transferred to Mendota State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. By 1968, doctors determined Ed was mentally fit and able to confer with counsel, and he was sent to trial in November of 1968. During the trial, Ed claimed the murder of Bernice Worden was an accident and that he didn't remember a lot about the other killings. Ed was found guilty, but another trial was ordered to determine his sanity. In that trial, he was found not guilty by reason of insanity, and the judge ordered him committed to Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane. July 26, 1984. Ed Gein dies of respiratory failure while still in custody at Mendota State Mental Health Institute. He was 77 years old. He was buried in the Plainfield Cemetery, where people would go and chip pieces of stone off of his headstone for like a souvenir, until the whole thing was finally stolen in 2000 and then recovered in 2001. It hasn't been replaced. Ed is buried in between his father, his brother, and his beloved mother. They rest there as a family for all eternity. Does anyone else feel like they need a shower? Now, if you're wondering why this story sounds familiar, it's because it has been adapted for film several times. Ed Gein served as the inspiration for the novel Psycho, which Alfred Hitchcock later turned into the famous film. Ed Gein and his House of Horrors also served as the inspiration for Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he also inspired Rob Zombie to use parts of the story in House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. Errol Morris and Werner Herzog interviewed Ed Gein in prison many times, and they were planning to make a film about him, but it never happened. I think that's a tragedy. Can you imagine those two covering this case? It would be a phenomenal film. There are also a whole bunch of documentaries on Ed Gein, including this gem called Deranged, another one that starts off with the producer kind of walking around in a field that's definitely not Ed Gein's old farm, pretending to pick up bones and skulls that are still laying there.
Today, this is all that's left of the Gein farmhouse. As archaeologists continue to dig, they still find relics from those days when Ed Gein roamed the hillsides of Plainfield, Wisconsin.
Anyway, there is a lot of information on Ed Gein out there, and yes, there are a lot of photos, too, if you care to try and find them. Whatever you call him, the real Buffalo Bill, Eddie the Butcher, or the Ghoul of Plainfield, there is no denying that Ed Gein is at the top of the list when it comes to history's greatest monsters. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. I'm happy you're here. I'm happy to be part of this community. If you haven't already, please subscribe. It really helps me a lot. Stay safe and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.